touchdown as he's ever caught. Soley looking for Owens. Jump ball. What a catch. Did you see that? It's first down. Cats inside the 15. Into the end zone. Chad Owens. Touchdown. Fifth touchdown pass of the night for Kolaros. That's a new career best. First and goal.
Welcome to Pod's Kiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, how are you doing this week, pal?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
Not so bad. It's been a while since you and I sat down to do one of these things, and there's a fair bit for us to talk about, so let's get right into it. Start, as we always do, with some Ticats news, the big news since we last sat down and had a chance to chit-chat about CFL. Kevin Elliott is back in the black and gold. I don't really want to go into whether we like the move or dislike the move, because I think we've both made it painfully clear that we loved Kevin Elliott with the Ticats last year. I look at this move and it makes me wonder, could this be the start of the idea or maybe the formation of an All-American wide receiving core? What do you think?
I mean, that's a possibility. They seem to have quite a bit of Canadian depth as they built it up over the years with Austin. So, I mean, if you could get American players at a so-called talent position like that, then I don't have a problem with it. I mean, if it works out in the ratio, if they have enough players, then, get as many talented guys as you can out catching balls from Kolaros.
Well, we know of a guaranteed 6 starting Canadians, right? Those 3 on the offensive line, Ted Laron, mm-hmm. Craig Butler, and Courtney Stephen. Now, maybe they go Canadian, maybe they go 2 Canadian defensive linemen with Michael Atkinson, and then they try to sign or draft another Canadian defensive tackle to play behind them to give them more depth with Evan Gill. Maybe they try to find a Canadian to play at the same linebacker position, or like there's some combination. We know those 6 guys though: Laurent, Stephen, Butler, Filer, Revenberg, and Bombin are going to start. That leaves that 7th one kind of up in the air. Could be in the receiving core with Spencer Watt. Could be elsewhere. I just look at the amount of American talent on this receiving unit and go Tasker and Tolliver and now Elliott, and they re-signed Brian Timms, who I know they're super high on. And there's, of course, the rumors are still out there that – and it's less rumors at this point and more just a guarantee that come April, if Terrell Sinkfield's not in the National Football League, he's back with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Which one of those guys sits on the bench? Which one of those guys gets cut in training camp? Which, you know, like there's a lot of talent in this wide receiving core, and I think an All-American one, that's kind of what the Alouettes used to do all those years ago. They'd play 5 Canadians in the offensive line and then not have to worry about playing a Canadian receiver. I think that could be pretty deadly, and Kolaros seems to have he got into rhythm with these guys. He had some good games with Elliott. Timms was his like number one guy going down the stretch there last year, especially in the playoffs, and get a pretty big playoff game. We know what he can do with Tasker. We know what he can do with Tolliver. We know what he can do with Sinkfield. So I don't know, the idea of an All-American receiving core, if you're not going to have Andy Fantuz in there, which even if he does come back, he probably misses most of, if not all of the season, I know it might be a good way to go, mix up the ratio that way.
Yeah, well, you talked about Montreal, and they sure had a lot of success over the years with 5 American receivers. So, you know, there's going to be that one position on the far side of the field that Spencer Watt played last year that you're just not going to get that many balls thrown your way. So there's going to be a one person – one talented guy that's not going to get that many touches. So that's going to be a tough pill to swallow, I think, for one of those American receivers.
Yeah,
if they play 5 American receivers.
Perhaps, but I also see these guys a lot. They move around. Tolliver's pretty static at the boundary receiver position, but he moves around too. He's moved in the slot. He's played the wide side before. I feel like they'll just move him around to get the best matchups possible. And you're right, that wide side wide receiver sees very little, because that throw that's a mile to throw that football, and that's not one you want to throw. You throw that a little bit late, it's going back the other way for 6. So that's why you don't see much action down there. But I don't know, I just see the idea of possibly, and again, they don't start 5 Americans, but they can, because of designated imports and all that other sort of stuff, they can find a way to get 5 Americans on the receiving side of the ball at one time. I just think that'd be a good move for the team.
Yeah, and we talked about Timms. I mean, I'm really high on him too. Just I was watching some highlights recently in of the playoff game, I think, and this guy has a lot of talent, and I think he could be a breakout player next year.
Yeah, he's going to be one of those guys that we're looking at. He had that audition last year, and I think him showing what he could do, and he didn't do a ton, but he had 70-something yards, had a touchdown or two, I think, in the last game of the regular season, and then in the playoffs combined. I think that's why you saw guys like Chad Owens allowed mm-hmm. to leave. I think that they – Owens would have cost more money. You can get Tim's cheaper. They have more talent in total because they let higher-priced players walk than they would have if they – and don't get me wrong. We discussed this last time. We both would have liked to have seen Chad Owens return. But I think the team might be better from an overall talent standpoint with more talent as opposed to – great talent, but kind of concentrated in a few players. Now the talent is spread out. There's more guys, more possibilities. And we saw it with when Tolliver and Taquan Underwood came into Hamilton. They kind of had a battle where the two of them, one would play and then the other would play, and they would kind of pick and choose who had the best game, and they'd get to stick in there. And obviously over time, it was Terrence Tolliver that proved he was the guy going forward. So maybe we could see something like that too. Cause like we're all sitting here talking about Brian Timms and kind of giving him a leg up and saying, oh, well, there's a guy who could start, but he has really only had two games. He showed great in those two games, but he could be a guy that maybe takes a step back in 2017. And he's a guy that maybe gets on the field every other game, but not necessarily every single game. And with the amount of receivers that we've seen, especially on this team, go down due to injury, it's never a bad thing to have some guys in reserve.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the more talent, the better. Yeah, anything can happen in any game. And, you know, Tasker's had his injury troubles the last couple of years. And you just have to stock up to, you know, to get that really good talent brought in that is cheap. Because we all know the salary cap is pretty small in the CFL. So, there may be players that, you know, there probably is players we never even heard of that'll make the team. And before you know it, they'll be a high paid player in the CFL. But we'll have them while they're a low paid player. So it'll be good.
I'm just glad Elliott's back specifically because I don't have to see him do that ball spin for another team. God, did I hate that move when he was an Argo. But and I think we both said it before. Man, did I love it when he was a Ticat.
I agree. I think it's a little over the top on every single catch he makes to do the ball spin. But, you know, he can do it well. So I enjoy watching it.
Hey, here's the thing. I look at it now since he's on our side. If you don't want to watch him spin the damn ball as a fan of the opposition team or as a member of the opposition team, don't let him catch the damn thing.
Yep, exactly.
It's like you hear about all the time when people are like, oh, I hate end zone celebrations. Well, then don't let the guy score a touchdown. You don't have to watch Cam Newton dab when he scores a touchdown if you don't let him in the end zone.
Where does this dabbing come from? I'm old, and so are you, but what the, like, where did this originate?
did you just edit yourself there?
Yeah, I did. Where did this originate, Josh? Tell me.
Do we really want to get into this? Okay, so it's a reference to coughing into your sleeve after doing some form of drug. I believe it's called Shatter. It's like a marijuana-type drug, and it was some Atlanta hip-hop band made a song about it, and then it took off, and now you have like dabbing Santa Claus t-shirts, and it seems to have faded in the last year or so. Kind of like, do you remember the song Ballin' by Jim Jones? Ballin'! That was a big thing with the New York Giants. They would do like, and then that, you know, as these things do, they wane and they go away, and you don't really see people dab as much anymore. It's kind of, that was so 2015.
I know, I just remember watching like sporting events and every single kid in the crowd was doing it, but you know, I didn't understand it, but we'll move on.
Yeah, we should move on because now we're sounding like old men. Speaking, you mentioned a little earlier about guys we don't know that have signed. The Ticats made a slew of signings over the last couple of weeks. They brought in linebacker Kavell Connor, defensive end Tariq McCord, defensive end Denzel Perrin, defensive back Tristan Dolan, I think. He's a Canadian player. Pair of running backs in Sierre Wood and Alex Green. Pair of wide receivers in Nathan Palmer and Frankie Okafor. And an offensive lineman by the name of Malcolm Bunch. Now, we could sit here and pretend that we know who all these guys are, but let's face it, we don't. Not through lack of research, but just through a lack of, like, guys like these sign all the time. And it's I think it's folly to kind of get into these guys. Well, will they make the team? Won't they make the team? The one thing that stands out to me here, though, are the running backs. Now, there was an article on Three Down Nation, I believe it was Sunday, about how these signings kind of maybe possibly could be sending a message to C.J. Gable that maybe your spot's not entirely secure, kind of like when C.J. Gable signed and sent a message to Siobhan Walker that maybe his spot wasn't entirely secure. I'll admit I don't know much about Alex Green. He went to the University of Hawaii. I do, however, know a lot about Sierre Wood, because he played for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, which is the NCAA team that I unfortunately do follow. I say unfortunately because they're usually pretty bad. But he is a guy who I remember watching him play at Notre Dame a few years ago thinking, I think this guy could play in the CFL. He's a good run blocker, can catch the ball in the backfield. He runs with purpose. He, in a lot of ways, honestly, reminds me of C.J. Gable. Maybe not as big, but still kind of has the same type of skill set. And I think he's a guy. He's going to be a guy when if he makes the team and he's in those preseason games, he's going to be a guy that I'm going to keep an eye on, because I'd like to see what he can do with the Rock. And I think he could be a guy that they sign now that could be someone we see making plays for this team during the regular season should, say, Gable get hurt, or maybe even, you know, not that I want to happen, beats out C.J. Gable for the job.
Yeah, it's always good to bring in as much competition as possible. Now, with C.J. Gable having injury troubles over the last couple of years, I think it's time that they brought in some players that could, you know, take over his spot. I'm a huge fan of C.J. Gable. I know you are as well. I know that Ken Austin is really high on him. Every time you hear him talk about C.J. Gable, it's always good things. So I think that Gable's obviously still the guy, but I think it's a smart move to bring in some talented running backs in case he goes down again, because, you know, we've had some questionable running backs behind him in the last couple of years, in my opinion. I mean, they've come in and they've had spurts of success when C.J. Gable was down, but there hasn't been that really solid backup running back, and hopefully one of these guys can be that.
No, we've had guys like Ross Scheuermann and Michael Ford and Ray Hawley. Like, this team has cycled through Nick Grigsby's another guy, has cycled through a fair amount of running backs due to Gable's injuries, and they've all performed well, or in some cases, but there's never been a guy. C.J. Gable, when he's on the field, and this is the thing that sucks, because if he could stay healthy, he'd be one of the best running backs in this league. He'd be up there being talked about with Jerome Messams and the Andrew Harrises, because he's so dynamic of a playmaker. Just look back on that 2013 rookie season of his, and nearly 1,400 total yards and like 12 or 13 touchdowns. And he was a monster, and he played in 15 games that year, and he was fantastic. And it's a shame that his body just keeps, and it's not like people will label him injury prone, but it's not the same thing over and over again. It's first it was the shoulder, like Fantuz. It's always something different, right? So it's just his body just sometimes, and look, like, there's some of the injuries, like the one when he popped his elbow, I think it was 2015 against the Argos. I think it was the home opener in the 2015 season where they blew out Toronto, and he got hurt in like the second quarter. It was like he planted his arm and then someone hit it with and bent it. Like, you can't help that. That happens. That could have happened regardless, but it happened because he was fighting for extra yards, because that's the player he is. I hope he's still the guy that can lead this team. I hope he has a few more very productive years, but I see the team setting up some competition, and you know what? Competition is good. C.J. Gable himself, I think, responded on Twitter just a few hours after the article went up that he's never feared competition, and that's a good thing. I think a lot of these guys, you know, you battle for a job, and I don't see any problem with that.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, they're professional athletes. They got to expect that there's going to be a competition for your position, you know? So I think he'll rise to the occasion, maybe a little bit more motivation, maybe light a fire under his ass, and hopefully he stays. I mean, it's so hard to stay healthy for 18 games in a regular season, and I don't expect him to. I don't really expect anyone to be in every game, but, you know, 14, 15 games would be a wonderful thing to have C.J. Gable in next year.
I completely agree, sir. So that's about it for the Ticats stuff. Keep these names in mind. You never know who the next Delvin Bro or Terrence Tolliver is amongst this group. We could be seeing a guy who in March we go, well, I don't know much about him. And then in September we're like, man, that guy's an all-star. So one of those guys could be coming from this group the Ticats just signed over the last couple of weeks. So CFL talk. Obviously the big news since you and I last did our thing is that Vince Young has officially signed with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I don't know about you, but when I first heard about this, like the fact that Young was on the negotiation list, I thought, no way. This is a ploy. This is a there's no way he's going to play. But then I thought, well, he's on the neg list. You wouldn't put a guy on the neg list if you hadn't talked to him and thought that he might have an interest in coming up here. And then, lo and behold, maybe about a month later, bam, there he is at a press conference holding up a Saskatchewan Rough Riders jersey. I never thought it would happen. Where he came from, I still remember the national championship game where he was a one-man wrecking show against the University of Southern California. And here he is playing in the CFL. Well, not necessarily playing in the CFL, but here he is signed with a CFL team. It's a bit surreal.
It is quite odd. I mean, I'm with you, man. Like when I first heard it, I thought, no way this is happening. It's just, you know, just a rumor type thing. And then now he's here, and I don't have a problem with the signing because, listen, this is pro football. I mean, anyone can be released at any time. If he doesn't have it, then he'll be gone. But the thing is, players like this who have a name, they have to come in with the right attitude. They have to respect the league, respect the players in the league, respect the history of the league, all that stuff. And sometimes that's not there. Now, with his press conference, he said all the right things. He seems to have a lot of respect for the league. He just, if he's in shape, if he takes it serious, then maybe it could work. Maybe it could work. If the 5 years is a long time not to play football. He's collected a lot of rust over those years, I'm assuming, and also gained some weight. So he's not the running Vince Young that he was back when he was in college or early on in his football career. I'm just assuming that. But, it could go either way. He could be the starter or he could be cut in training camp. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
No, you're right. It could be one end of the spectrum or the other. I could see him being a backup. He didn't sign reportedly for that much money, like a bit over 100 grand as a base salary, no signing bonus, no guaranteed money, and he gets playing incentives that'll bump him up to a little over 200 grand if he starts. So it's actually a pretty reasonable contract when you think of it. It's not the veteran minimum, but I'm not sure how many quarterbacks in the CFL period make the veteran minimum. Especially ones who have played a little. Like, it's not like Vince Young is, he's some rookie coming up from the NCAA. This guy does have a pedigree, and while you can't translate NFL success or NCAA success to CFL success, I think that's a completely reasonable number to give Young.
Yeah, I remember seeing those numbers, and I thought that's pretty good. You know, a player like him might come in and think, oh, I'm going to be the highest paid player in the CFL just because of my name and my past. So he seems to be pretty humbled, and he seems to just love the game of football, and he just wants to play again. So if that's the case, I have no problem with this signing, and I wish him the best of luck.
Now, here's my question to you. Had this been the Toronto Argonauts that made this signing, don't you think that this would have been treated a lot differently? Don't you think people would have said, oh, they're signing Vince Young. This is purely a PR stunt. This is purely a marketing stunt. This is a chance to try to sell tickets, but Vince Young doesn't have it. But he signs in Saskatchewan where they don't need help selling tickets. They don't need help marketing the team. But if this would have been done in a city like Toronto, I think the reaction to this would have been completely different.
Oh, yeah, but they would have jumped all over the Argos, like the media and everybody, the fans, because you're right. I mean, Saskatchewan and Toronto are night and day in the CFL. I mean, you got the franchise that makes, I'm guessing, makes the most money usually against the franchise that struggles to get 10, 15,000 fans in the seats. So, yeah, if he was in Toronto, it would have been a totally different story.
Which is weird, though, because it should have been – if they would have brought him in with – say they have a veteran presence at quarterback, much like the Riders do. The Argos have Ricky Ray. The Riders have Kevin Glenn. Ricky Ray, you'd probably say, is more entrenched as a starter, as we'll get to in a bit, than Glenn really ever has been almost anywhere in a CFL career. You'd think that it would be, okay, well, they're bringing him in to see what he can do. The reaction should be the same as it is with Saskatchewan. But because it's Toronto and the idea of – they'd bring in a big American name like this simply to sell tickets, I think the response would have been negative. And I'm not saying I don't blame people for thinking that way, but it kind of bothers me that depending on where this would have happened, you have people going, no, forget saying anything negative. This is purely positive. Whereas the opposite, whereas if it would have been in like the Toronto direction, you would have had a completely separate reaction, and people would have been, what do you mean? No, there's no way Vince Young can play. This is all just to put his face on a billboard and sell tickets.
Yeah, that's exactly what it would have been. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Any big name that they bring into Toronto, they probably get a negative reaction, unless he was, you know, in his prime or close to it. I mean, Young is – it just – kind of jumping all around here, but it's kind of interesting that they get rid of a quarterback in Darian Durant that's about the same age as Young, has a ton of more experience in the CFL, and has won championships. So I know it's just an interesting move to bring in a player around the same age that doesn't have any experience in this league.
Yeah, the weird thing to me is that they're paying Glenn and Young probably in total about the same as they would pay Darian Durant. If that's the case, why not just keep Darian Durant? I don't think the Saskatchewan Roughriders are a better football team with Kevin Glenn and Vince Young as they would be with Darian Durant. And I know people had said, well, the reason they got rid of Durant, they allowed them to bring in Daron Carter and Chad Owens and the million names they brought in during free agency. But if they're paying two quarterbacks this much money, they could have paid one that and then gone with a cheap, neglist American guy who would have made close to the league minimum as their third string guy. That talking point that we did talk about, I think you and I even talked about that when Durant was traded, that talking point we brought is kind of dead now because they're still spending essentially the same amount of money on quarterbacks as they would have been with Durant there as they are now with Glenn and Young.
Yep, this is true. And Saskatchewan's an interesting team going into the next season here. Even without the Vince Young signing, they'd be an interesting team to watch. I mean, Kevin Glenn gets another shot, and all the players they're bringing in. It's going to be very cool to watch this team and how they progressed from last year. Because, like I've said before, I thought that they really progressed late in the season last year. So I want to see if they can take that over into next season with all these new players. Because you'd think it's going to take some time to gel, especially if they don't have a quarterback that can throw the ball. We all know that Glenn can, but he's had some tough times over the last couple of years, so we shall see.
With the amount of American receivers that they have, don't be surprised if one or two of them are cut in training camp, and I wouldn't be shocked if some of them, one, two, three, depending on how many let go, if a handful of them landed with the Toronto Argonauts, because they have Daron Carter, they have Caleb Hawley, they have Naaman Roosevelt and Chad Owens, and I feel like I'm even forgetting a couple of guys that they brought in, because I don't have it written down, because I wasn't planning on going in this direction, but they have a number of American receivers, and you can only play so many. And Daron Carter's probably making a pretty good buck. I know Chad Owens got more money than the Ticats gave him last year, so he's making some pretty good coin. Naaman Roosevelt signed a contract extension. The other guys are on rookie deals. Oh, Ricky Collins Jr. is another guy that I forgot. Oh, and Amonte Edwards. Like, there's a lot of American receivers there. I don't know if any of these guys are going to take practice roster spots. You could see some of these guys, and it's probably the lower tier guys, or maybe it's one of the guys making a lot of money that they get released, and Toronto could use some pass catchers. They don't have much in the way of a receiving core. And this isn't a shot at the Riders. They went out and they signed a bunch of guys, and they're playing by the rules. Like, you can spend as much money as you want prior to the start of the season. The cap does not start getting enforced until the first game is kicked off. So bring in a bunch of guys, try them out, and then cut guys that don't work out. So I don't see a problem with it, but I just see that I think there could be a few big names on the free agent market come late June.
Yep, just for the start of the season. I mean, there could be some swapping going on there for sure.
Another thing about this whole Vince Young thing, and this just came up a few hours ago. We're recording this Monday night. This came up not long before you and I sat down. A reporter for the New York Daily News wrote some garbage article saying that Geno Smith should play in the CFL. Now, if anyone doesn't know, Geno Smith was a quarterback for the New York Jets, second-round draft pick, was a highly touted rookie coming out of West Virginia a few years ago. He's a free agent, not going to re-sign with the Jets. He's going to go somewhere else. And this guy, whose name I'm not going to mention because I don't want to give him any publicity because this is a garbage opinion, basically said, well, Vince Young signed in the CFL, so now Geno Smith should go up there, get some playing time, and prove that he can play. And again, we have to stress, I don't have a problem with the Vince Young signing, but this is what Vince Young signing is going to give us. Now we're going to get piece by piece about all these bust players, and we're going to get these fools in the American media who don't know the CFL game are going to be saying, oh, well, he flamed out here. Well, like Vince Young, he can go to Canada and try to resurrect his career. And they know nothing about this league. And the whole thing is always, and it was the same with Tim Tebow, and it's the same with Johnny Manziel, and it's always about, oh, they'll go to Canada and they'll get playing time. If you think Geno Smith is going to walk into the Canadian Football League and take one of the nine starting positions, you're a goddamn moron. And again, I must stress, I have no issues with the Riders signing Vince Young. They are doing what they can, what they think will make their team better. But now we're going to have to put up with all these hot takes from American sports writers about how player X, who's a bust, should play in the CFL. And it just – I'm just sick of it. Nothing we do is going to ever change this idea that you can leave the NFL as a terrible player, go up to Canada and dominate, and then come back to the NFL. But it's just when I see it, it just makes me roll my eyes every single time.
Yeah, it's just they don't have much knowledge about the league. I mean, there's only nine teams, and listen, they're – all nine teams in this league want to win badly. Okay, this isn't a rec league. Okay, this is professional football, and we're hearing the names now. Geno Smith. I heard Colin Kaepernick. I heard Johnny Manziel. Whatever. But you're right. It's opened a can of worms now that Vince Young has come up north to play in the CFL. Now we're gonna see, like we just saw today, all these reporters saying, "Just go play in the CFL because you're gonna." Going to be a guaranteed starter, and you're going to rack up 7,000 yards, and you're going to get a look from the NFL again. It's just not what happens. Okay, they're going to have to come up here, and they're going to have to compete with bona fide starters in this league that have built up a reputation as good quarterbacks. And it's just not that easy. It's not as easy as what these Americans think it is. It's not even close.
I actually think Colin Kaepernick would make for a very good CFL quarterback, but I also think Colin Kaepernick can still make a very good NFL quarterback. But Colin Kaepernick is not coming to the CFL and taking Matt Nichols' job with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not – these things aren't going to happen. This notion that, like – it boggles my mind that people seem to think that these guys can just come up here and dominate and – it's again, like I said, it just makes me roll my eyes. It doesn't bother me to the sense that I feel like I need to get super angry about it. But it's one of those things when I see it, I just go like, have we not gone through this enough over the past 50 years with Ricky Williams came up here, Tim Rosenbach came up here. Like, not everyone's going to be Doug Flutie. And I just wish that the CFL. Now, I don't need it to get respect from the American media. I don't care about that. They're going to think what they think about it. That's their business. I just wish it could stop being the go-to for this player sucks. Send him to Canada and he'll get better. And it's like, get out of here.
Yeah, I remember I bought a Madden game, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't know, I missed a field goal and the announcer was like, oh, looks like they send him to Canada. And I was like, oh, my God. They've even got it in the Madden game now, but it's just the way it is. I see Canadians saying, oh, like, if, Johnny Manziel, he comes here to save the CFL. We don't need saving, okay? The CFL is fine right now. Yes, there's problems. There are always going to be problems, but, to save the CFL, we don't need saving. We're doing just fine.
You know what? Every sports league now is having its share of difficulties. The NHL, I just saw an article in the last week about the NHL, how their revenues are stagnating. They're finding no room for growth in their revenue department. No one's talking about the NHL needing to gimmick things up or, you know what I mean? Like, it's the CFL. We're doing fine. The CFL, if anyone out there who watches the CFL ever thinks that this league is going to be one of the big boys, it's not. But it's a nice little league. It's a fun football league. It's still professional sports. These guys are still paid well. They're still paid to play the game and play it at a high level. Even if you want to say, and I agree, the NFL is the best football league in the world. The CFL is number two, and sometimes there's no problem being number two. This is still highly competitive, highly fun. And if you're anyone out there who just needs a football fix, why wouldn't you watch the CFL? But we're kind of going all over the place with this. This idea of player going up to CFL, and it just every single year we seem to get it. And I think now it's just going to be doubly, triply worse because of one of those big name guys who he should go to Canada to play has come to Canada to play.
Yep. And if they do come to Canada to play, then I have no problem with it as long as they respect the game and respect the players in the game. And if they're humbled and all that stuff, then I'm fine with it. If Kaepernick wanted to come up or Manziel or anything, if they take it serious, then I don't have a problem with it at all.
All right. So enough about Vince Young and idiot American reporters. Let's talk some stuff that actually happened in the Canadian Football League. And we're not going to get into the Mark Trestman, Jim Popp thing because you and I discussed that last time, even though it wasn't official. I believe it was official like 2 days later. They had the press conference. And out of that whole press conference, the biggest thing I think that came out of it was that Mark Trestman named Ricky Ray the starting quarterback for the Toronto Argonauts. What did you think the first time you heard this?
I was surprised, honestly. Drew Willey's there. He was a Milanovic Barker guy. They liked him. Obviously, they're not there anymore. So I think that Trestman has watched Ray play when he was with Montreal and was very impressed with his play. So I'm a little surprised that he announced it like at the press conference right away, but I think that decision would have been made eventually. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think Drew Willey is a better quarterback than Ricky Ray, so I think they would have came to that conclusion probably in training camp.
The thing with it, I have no problems with the announcement. I think it makes sense. It's not a shock to me at all that Trestman would want the guy that he's probably most familiar with. Trestman's very last game coaching in the CFL up until he coaches his next one was against Ricky Ray and the Toronto Argonauts, beat him in the 2012 East Final. So this is not a surprise to me. But he can name whoever he wants as a starting quarterback. If they don't find some offensive line help, and they just signed Jamichael Dean, they've obviously brought in Peter Diakowski. They've tried to revamp that offensive line, but if they don't find guys to keep him upright, it's not going to matter who the name is starter because he's not going to last.
Oh, exactly. I mean, Ray's had his troubles with injuries, and Ray has been one of the best quarterbacks that we've ever seen, and maybe he's thinking, like, when he came into Montreal, Kyle Veal was probably around the same age as Ray is now. So maybe he's thinking, hey, I can take this veteran quarterback and do the same thing I did with AC and resurrect his career, because I remember Kyle Veal at the time was kind of looked like he was on a downward spiral, you know, nearing the end of his career. And Trestman came in and he's probably never played that good as he did when he was coached by Trestman. So I think that he's thinking he can do the same thing with Ray.
He probably does, and I think the best chance they have of succeeding is keeping Ray upright and having him play. But man, oh man, does that Drew Willey trade just get worse by the day? They have now traded the first overall pick in the draft for the guy who's going to be their backup quarterback. That's insane.
They really did, hurt this franchise near the end of it. I mean, trading for Willey, getting rid of all those talented receivers. They would probably like to have some of those guys on the roster for next season if they could, but now they're all gone. So, they did some damage near the end of that, near the end of their run.
And they bungled this hiring process of a head coach and general manager by taking so damn long. They lost out on potentially Chris Williams, Abdul Kane, Emmanuel Davis, Derek Dennis, Chad Owens. Like, they missed out on guys because they had no plan. They had no path that they were on. And we kind of talked about this last time where it's like, this is a move they could have made 3 months ago and everyone would have been applauding it. It's like, okay, the Argos have made a great hire here and now let's get this going. They even could have waited until early January because Trestman was fired by the Ravens. Maybe he was hoping for another NFL gig, but by March, those were exhausted. The last coaching hire in the NFL only took so long to get filled because the 49ers had to wait until Kyle Shanahan was done being the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl before they could officially hire him as their head coach. if the Falcons would have been knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, that job would have been filled. There would have been no more openings for Trestman, who would have probably only really accepted maybe a coordinator position, maybe a QB coach spot, who knows. Like, there were no real NFL or even NCAA coaching positions available. So even if you waited until early January, which is what the Ticats did when they hired George Cortez all those years ago, they didn't get him until after the NFL period was over. It still would have been a great move. They'd had no one in December. That sucks. They have a month where they don't have a GM or head coach. But okay, whatever. You can get over that. But and Michael Copeland said in the press conference that this move, Pop was the only one they offered the job to. Like, that's bunk. If these were the guys you wanted to land initially, this would have been done months ago and not taken until March to get done. It's revisionist history, and I think it's just outright lies from Michael Copeland. It's a great hire, but again, it costs them. This team doesn't have a lot of talent. Yes, they're going to have Ricky Ray at starter, but like you said, the tail end of this, the last regime, got rid of a bunch of talent, made a bunch of moves that just has set this franchise back. I think Pop and Trestman can get them back on track. I don't know if they'll do it in 2017, but if I was a fan of the Argos, I'd be looking ahead to 2018. But now we're talking, is Ricky Ray going to be even there in 2018? And are they going to go in with Drew Willey? Who the hell knows? Like, this is a mess that they've done as well as I think they could have hoped in what they've accomplished by getting Pop and Trestman. But there's still a lot of work there in Toronto to do.
Absolutely. I mean, if anything, get the GM and the head coach in place before free agency. I mean, that should have been a must by them. And I question whether Copeland made this hire, or was it Tannenbaum and Bell going over his head, like what happened with Pop in Montreal? I mean, they were hiring coaches that Pop didn't hire and all this stuff. It was just a big mess. So, and there was rumors that Copeland and Pop didn't really see eye to eye and all this stuff like that. And Pop, or Copeland wanted Trestman, but not Pop. And so it's a bit of a messy situation. And I'm, you know, Copeland kind of looks like a bit of an idiot. I mean, it hasn't gone well for him in his first year and a bit as Argos president.
No, it's been an unmitigated disaster, and everything should fall at his feet. But now they got the guys in place, so now let's see what they can do on the field. They've also made some additions to their coaching staff. They hired their offensive coordinator and their defensive coordinator. Marcus Brady is retained as offensive coordinator. But defensive coordinator is a name you and I are very familiar with, and fans in Saskatchewan are familiar with. Mr. Corey Chamberlain is back in the CFL as the Argos defensive coordinator. We know him from his one-year stint as the Ticats defensive coordinator, where I don't know how you felt about that defense, but I don't think it was very good his one season here. They gave up a lot of points. It was better than the guy that got after him, Casey Crehan. That defense was atrocious. But Chamberlain's defense was third last in the league in points allowed. I know he's got this reputation as being a great defensive mind, but I didn't really see it here in Hamilton. And he obviously went to Saskatchewan, was the head coach, won a Grey Cup, all that good stuff there for them. But I don't know. I'm not too sold on this hiring.
Yeah, they had a pretty good coach in place already, or he was the past coach last year with Rich Stubler. A ton of experience, a ton of success in the league over many, many years. Now, Chamberlain comes in, and he's been a head coach, and he's won a title, and you can question whether that was his coaching or just bringing in a ton of talent that year. But it should be interesting to see how his defense performs, because you're right. I believe it was 2011 when he was the coordinator. Yeah. So third last in the league. That's not too great. But yeah, he could have a tough time with the lack of talent on that Toronto Argonauts defense. I mean, they've lost some players. They just lost Corey Greenwood, who I think is a top level Canadian at linebackers. So it's gonna be a tough ride, I think, for Chamberlain, especially the first year.
Yeah, I think the Argos, I think everything, because of how late they did everything, I think it's going to be a rough year to be an Argo fan. I think they're going to have to put up with a lot of jeers and stuff from Ticat fans, especially, because I think the Ticats are set up to be better than the Argos. I don't know if they're going to be, you know, class of the league, but I think we'd think that they're going to go 18-0 and win the Grey Cup no matter what they did. Yeah. But and I say this because I want the Argos to be successful financially. I want them to lose every game they play, but I know that that's not realistic. You can't have a team go 0-18 every year and then hope that they're going to make money and be a profitable franchise. So I know every now and then they got to be good. I just don't see them being very good this year.
No, I don't see it either. I mean, we could get shocked and they could be really good and they could pull out a miracle. But at this point in time, I'm going to have to agree with you.
Well, that's just it. I look at this. This is going to go one of two ways. The Argos are going to be the worst team in the CFL, or they're going to win the Grey Cup, and they're going to shove it in everyone's faces. We did it, blah, blah, blah. It's us against the world, all that nonsense. It's going to be one of the – there's not going to be, oh, they finished 9-9, and they lost a tight Eastern semifinal. No, this is going to be a team that either completely tanks or they win the whole thing. I look at them very similarly to the Rough Riders from last year, where I think they use this season as an extended training camp, find the guys they need, get some cap space to bring in some guys that they want, and then you see them start to take off in 2018. That's just my opinion.
I could totally see that. And you know that they're not thinking that. They want to win this year, but there's got to be a long-term plan of, you know, a vision of success over the next 5-10 years to build the franchise up. So hopefully that's what they're thinking and what their plan is.
So – have you followed this Rashawn Simonis suspension thing at all?
A little bit. Not overly, but a little bit.
It's a really weird story. So he was the top-ranked wide receiver on the CFL Scouting Bureau. I think he was the number 4-ranked overall player. He's had a weird sort of career. He was kicked out of the University of Calgary, I think for poor grades, perhaps. He ended up going into the supplemental draft in the NFL last year. Didn't get picked, but then signed with the Cincinnati Bengals. Played with them in the preseason and in training camp, and then was cut. He then went and played with the Okanagan Sun of the CJFL. I believe it's called CJFL. And then he was supposed to be drafted this year. And then word came out that he would not be getting drafted this year because the CFL rules are he was suspended. He tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs while he was with the Bengals, which means he would have been suspended for the first 4 games had he made an NFL roster, which he didn't. But in the CFL, because he hasn't been drafted yet, the rules are in their drug policy that a player who tests positive for a banned substance has their draft year deferred to the following year, which is such a weird rule. This kid now essentially sits out 2 years because he wasn't eligible to be drafted last year, and now he's not eligible to be drafted this year. I understand personal responsibility, but this suspension for a year having his draft year deferred seems a bit harsh, especially considering if he had been in the league, he would have only been suspended 2 games. And had he made the NFL, he would have only been suspended for 4. It seems like pushing this kid's draft year back a whole year, it seems kind of overkill, no?
Yeah, it seems a little harsh, but, you know, those are the rules. The new rules came in, and, you know, that's what everyone's screaming for. You know, make sure that if you're caught using drugs that you're punished unless it's, you know, not on the ban list. So, yeah, if it was my choice, or I would let him – I'd give him, you know, a couple-game suspension, but I wouldn't move his draft back another year. That seems like a long time to wait over that. So, you know, it's a very interesting – you never really see someone that – is in an NFL camp the year before, and then he's in the CFL draft. It's a very odd situation.
Another thing too with this also is, did the CFL not know their own rules? Because this kid was tested positive back in his suspension would have come in back last September, and yet he was on both the September and December scouting bureau lists. Well, if he's not eligible to be drafted, why is he on these lists? And it took Scott Mitchell of Post Media to send out a tweet saying he's been busted. He will not be eligible for the CFL draft. There's been no official word from the CFL on this. I have not seen a report. I have not seen any sort of statement made on the league website or by anyone to say that this is in fact what it is. But if you read the rules, he will not be draft eligible. Apparently, they told all the teams, but they haven't made this public. I hesitate to use the term Bush League because that is a term that I hate when people use about the CFL. But that their handling of this situation is a little Bush League, don't you think, Mike?
I don't understand that they wouldn't have that knowledge and that he'd be on the list so high. I mean, or on the list at all. It's very strange. And yeah, they should be they should be more aware of what's going on and more aware of their own rules, to be honest.
Well, the thing, too, is the reason that the Center for, I think the Canadian Center for Ethics and Sports, I think is who they had the beef with when they had their old drug policy, and then they didn't have a drug policy for a year. One of the things was that they didn't like that there was no transparency. Well, there's no transparency in this because the league itself has not said anything. We only know about this because Scott Mitchell, not Scott Mitchell. I hope people don't get this wrong. It wasn't Scott Mitchell, the president of the Tiger Cats. It's Scott Mitchell, the news reporter. There's like 9 million Scott Mitchell out there. He's a great follower. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you should. Great CFL stuff you get from him. But it was he sent out a tweet. If that didn't happen, none of us would know about this. And that to me, in this age of the league can get their information out immediately. They have their own website. For this to sit dormant, they still haven't said anything. And this was like a week and a half ago or so that this news broke. They still haven't said anything. That to me is that makes them look bad as far as I'm concerned. And I don't want to sit here and bash the CFL, but when they do things that I don't agree with, I'm going to call them out. This if this is true, and I have no reason to believe it's not, their silence is ridiculous.
Yeah, they need to make a statement, especially on a guy that's such a high profile, a guy that could be a first round draft pick, a guy that could be a big time talent in the CFL. They should put out what they think and what's actually going on here.
Well, what are they going to do? Like, I think they have one more scouting bureau list. I think it comes out in April, just month before
the draft.
Now, if
he's on the list on that scouting bureau, then
who the hell knows what's going on? But what are they going to do? They're going to drop a little tidbit, like, because sometimes they'll say like so and so moved up and so and so dropped off. They're going to say like, oh, Rashawn Simonis dropped off the list because he's suspended for a year because of like. This is not something that you can add as a footnote on another story. This is the story in and of itself. And the fact that we've heard nothing from them, I think it makes the league look bad.
Yeah, I think it does too.
Okay, Mike. So that's all the news. But we're not done yet because you had a fun idea that we could do on these types of weeks when we don't have a ton to talk about, where we could have a little fun with some ranking of players, but not in the way you think. Why don't you tell everyone what your little idea was and how much fun we're going to have doing it?
Well, CFL fans, especially of our generation, a generation that grew up playing video games, have always hoped to see a CFL video game, whether it be an attachment to a Madden game or its own thing. So I thought it'd be a fun idea to rank the players, the quarterback specifically. You know, give them a rating like they do in Madden. You know, Tom Brady might be rated 97, 98, or Peyton Manning, whatever. So we're going to go through that, the starters in the league and their presumed backups. So we're going to give them a Madden rating for this non-existent CFL video game.
Okay, so the way I did it when you gave me the idea, I broke it down by teams because we did decide, like you said, to do the starter and the guy who we think is going to be the backup quarterback. So, for instance, for an example, we have Jonathan Jennings and Travis Lulay for the BC Lions. I broke them down by teams. Did you break them down by, like, did you do them in order or did you also do them in teams?
I did them as I did the starters first and I ranked them from highest to lowest and then I went to the backups. But we can do them by team. So do you want to start in the East?
Sure. Do you want to go first? This is your thing, so you should kick this off. Where do you want to start? What team do you want to go with first? And who are we talking about?
All right, let's start with our team. Let's start with the Tiger Cats.
Sounds pretty good.
So we got the starter, obviously, Kaleros. I gave him 91.
Okay. Any reason specifically for giving him a 91?
Well, I think that I was going basically by last year's performances. And listen, I think Kaleros could be a 97 or a 98 or whatever, like the highest rank you can get. But he didn't play that much last year, and I think that dropped him down a little bit in my eyes. So I gave him a 91, and I gave his backup, Jeremiah Mazzoli, an 82.
You know what? We are so close. I gave Kaleros a 93, and I gave Mazzoli an 82. I gave Kaleros – I would have had him higher – he, I believe, if I'm looking at my rankings, is tied for the second highest ranked quarterback that I have on my list. But you're right, didn't play a lot last year. He has that injury issue, so in a Madden game, if you're more prone to getting injured, they tend to knock your ratings down a little bit. So that's why I had him there. And Mazzoli is one of my top ranked backup quarterbacks because I think an 82 ranking that you and I both have, I think that seems pretty fair, because we know we could come in and get the job done. And if you want to, if you were, I don't know about you, but when I used to play Madden games, you do like the fantasy draft. I'd always take like the cheapest. I always took Doug Flutie as my starting quarterback because he was like ludicrously cheap. And I knew that if I played as Flutie in the game, I could always dominate with him because he was a dual threat quarterback. Mazzoli's kind of the same. You probably get him for pretty cheap. And at an 82, he can still do a lot of good things. And he's got that scrambling ability. I think the low 80s for him, and I think the low 90s for Kolaros is perfect. We're pretty close on this one. Not bad for the first one out the gate.
Yep, and now let's jump to Toronto. I got Ricky Ray as the starter, as Tressman stated. And I got him as an 87. Now, if this game was made, if we were talking about this a couple years ago, he probably would have been the one of the highest ranked players in the game. But I think his play has dropped off in the recent years, and I think 87 is a pretty good rating for him. And I got Willie as an 80. I just, you know, he's okay. He's not really good. He's not great. He's just okay. An 80 rating, I think, is fair for him.
We have our first major disagreement, but it's not about Ricky Ray. I have Ray an 86. So that's pretty darn close. I couldn't say anything better than you said about why Ray falls in that category. Like you said, a couple years ago, he's a 93 to a 96. But the injuries, the age have caught up to him. He's still a viable starting quarterback, but he's not the guy. I have Drew Willie at a 71. I just do not believe in Drew Willie whatsoever. I think his if we were to do it by build a character in the game, I think his accuracy wouldn't be great. I think his attributes, like his intangibles, I think they would fall down. I just don't have a lot of faith in Drew Willie. Maybe I'm being overly harsh, but yeah, I pegged him at a 71.
Well, that's lower than anyone I have on my list.
Wow, really? I got some. I got one guy in the 60s. I got two guys in the 60s.
Wow.
Oh,
all right.
Maybe I'm a tougher grader than you are when it comes to the backups, at least.
Yep. Could be. So let's take it on to Montreal now. You got Darian Durant as the presumed starter. I got him at an 89, which maybe
so
a little
close.
High.
I got him at an 88. Our starters are nearly neck and neck, man. I put him at 88.
Okay, so that's as close as you can get. I think that he played pretty well last year under the circumstances, and I think that he can still be a very productive quarterback. So yeah, I got 89, which I think is a pretty good rating, and his backup is Kevin Glenn. I got him at an 84. I think that he's
wait. Kevin Glenn.
Yep.
Kevin Glenn's the starter in Saskatchewan, dude.
Oh Jesus, I'm sorry. Okay. Durant and
I got Vernon Adams as the backup.
Yeah, Adams. Yeah, that's who I got. I'm sorry. yeah, I got Vernon Adams at an 80. I think that he can be a productive player. Maybe that rating's a little high, but I got him at 80. So what do you think about that?
I do think it's a little high. There's not a big difference between my take on Adams. I got Adams at a 75. He's the guy in the game that I would look at as he's got a decent base, but he's got exponential room to grow. So, like, this is a guy who, if he ever took over the starting job and proved that he could do it, he would then in the next game be someone who jumps to an 85 and then an 89. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of see those guys when they first come into the league in these games. Their ratings are a little lower than you would expect, but I think Adams at a 75, I don't think 80's ridiculous. I just think a little lower. We haven't seen him do too much, but I think this is a guy in the game that if he was in the game, he'd have such potential, but the actual output, I see him as about a B+ quarterback right now.
Yep. I have no problem with that rating. So Ottawa, the last team in the East, I got Harris at a 90. I think that.
Are you kidding me? I got Harris at 89.
Oh boy. That's
this is
close,
ridiculous.
I think Harris is a really good quarterback, and I think he has to – every time he's got in there, he's been pulled for someone else. So I think that you give him a full year, see what he can do, and I think he'll be – I think the 90 rating will be good for him next year. I think that would be a fair rating. So, yeah, I got Harris at 90, and then I got Drew Tate at 80. I think that he hasn't played in a while. But in his past, he's got in there and shown that he can be productive. So maybe it's a little bit high because he didn't look that good last year, but I'm going to stick with the 80 for him as well.
Well, like I said, I have Harris at an 89. Also a guy who I agree with. I think he's got room to grow, and if he puts in a full season and shows what he could do over 18 full games without getting hurt or without getting benched, I think this is a guy that you see up right up there with Caleros and some of the other quarterbacks that we haven't mentioned yet that are obviously out west in that low to mid-90 area. I got Tate at a 78, so we're pretty close on that as well. I just looked at Drew Tate, and I can't give him an 80 simply because he just looks like he doesn't give a crap anymore. And I even think 78 might be too high. But I think in the game, I think he'd be a guy that you'd want as a backup. And like I said, when I mentioned Mazzoli, he's a guy who you'd look at in an expansion draft situation and go, well, maybe I'll take Tate, save money at quarterback, and then take better players at receiver or running back or what have you. Mm-hmm. So yep. Not too far off of most of them. I think the only real big difference was Drew Willey, but everything else, especially our starters, man, we were like neck and neck with who we picked out east. So either that means we're both idiots or we're both really smart.
Yeah, I'll go with the latter.
Yeah, same here. Okay, we're heading out west now? Where do you want to start there?
Yeah, we're heading out west. We're heading out west. I'm going to start with Calgary. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Levi Mitchell, but you got to respect him. I got him at a very high 97.
Oh, my God, dead on. Same, really? Same. Yep, 97.
Yeah, he's the highest rated quarterback for me. He just proved it last season that he's probably the best quarterback in the league at this point. So I got him at a 97, and I picked, you know, you could argue who's going to be the backup next year. It could be Mitchell Gale. It could be Buckley because he was the third stringer and maybe he moves up to second string. But I went with Buckley just for the hell of it. And I got him at a 73 because we just haven't seen anything from him. We've seen him come in and do quarterback sneaks and be pretty successful at it. But you can't judge a player on that, a quarterback on that. So I got him at a low 73.
The only reason Mitchell is a 97 and not a 99 for me is mobility. He's not much of a scrambler. He can run, but he doesn't run all that often, so that knocks him down just a couple pegs. He's still my top-ranked player, bar none, number one guy. He's the Peyton Manning of this hypothetical CFL football game. I have Andrew Buckley, and I feel kind of bad about this. I'm at a 63. And again, it's only because we haven't seen him play. We know he can do those goal line plunges, which if they ever do make a CFL game, I hope that that's an option when you do those like short yardage situations that it automatically puts in the backup quarterback, because that's such a CFL thing that I'd be a little ticked off if they didn't do that. He's great at those. He's the best I've seen probably since Drew Tate or Quinton Porter. Quinton Porter, when you had like 9 rushing touchdowns because of those goal line plunges. So he's really good at it, but I don't know what he can do on the professional level as an actual quarterback. So I had to give him my lowest rating, so that was a 63. So Calgary has both my highest rating and my lowest rating, which really shouldn't come as much of a shock because Bo Levi Mitchell is going to play every game barring injury, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to move on to where I live in Edmonton, and I got Riley at a 95.
Ooh, okay. Now, okay, close. I got him at 93.
Okay.
I'd with Zach.
Now, I think you could argue that he was on par or even better than Mitchell last year. I think that he put up some great numbers. He was just great all season. His play compared to the year before, even though they won the Grey Cup, you know, their strength was the defense in that year. And I thought Riley played well in that Grey Cup year. But the jump that he made when Jason Moss came in and started coaching, and they were running a different offense. And, you know, I was just so impressed with Riley last season that I had to give him a high rating of a 95. Now, his backup is Franklin. And where is he here? I gave Franklin an 83. I think that we've seen him play.
Close on that one,
yeah, too. I think we've seen him play. I think he's produced when he's got out there. I think he's looked great when he's got on the field. So an 83 for a backup is a pretty darn good rating, I'd say.
I completely agree. I have Riley, like I said, at 93. Again, he would be a bit higher, but the injuries factor in. He was healthy all last season, but you can't take away the fact that he does get hurt. He does make himself susceptible to injuries too. Remember in the playoff game when he dove head first and missed a little bit of time? It's like He's got to protect himself. So that knocked him down just a little bit. So I don't think 95 is ridiculous. I think 93, that's my pick. But you know what I mean? Like that 93, 94, 95, I think is perfectly suitable. Franklin, my top backup quarterback, I gave him an 85 rating, so we're pretty close there as well. He's the guy that obviously is someone who in the next couple of years is going to take over for one of these older guys as the starting quarterback of a team. I think everyone in Saskatchewan hopes it's there. I see him as someone who the only reason his rating is as low as it is, he looks like he's got the tools to be a 90 plus, but he doesn't get on the field. So you're not going to have a backup quarterback on your team at a 90. That's ridiculous. So I think an 85, you know, that low 80s to mid 80s, I think is a good spot for him. So that's where I picked him. So, man, you and I are pretty similar on a lot of these. It's not making much room for some argument.
No, we are not. But we will go on to the next team, which will be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Now, Matt Nichols is the starter there, and I got him at an 86. Now, that might seem a little low, but – and yes, he had a good year last year, but I'm just not – I'm waiting to see what he does this year, okay? So I'm going to give him a decent rating, not a great rating. I give him an 86. And his backup, we'll assume, will be Dan Lefebvre. And we've seen him play. We've seen him do some good things. And I got him as an 80, which I think is a pretty decent rating for a backup.
So I got Nichols at an 84 for the exact same reasons that you marked him as at your number, because I look at him and I say, I want to see him do it over full season. He does things really well, but I don't see him excelling at any one thing. Like with Riley, you have the deep ball. With Mitchell, he's just great at everything. Caleros mixes it up with a little bit of the run. He's got that athleticism, but he's also great throwing the ball deep, and he's pretty accurate. Nichols, I think, is a guy who does a lot of really good things, but doesn't do anything spectacularly well. So, again, he's a player that could get bumped up. If we decide to make this a yearly thing and we come back next year and do some rankings, you could see Nichols go from an 84 up to, depending on how his season goes, perhaps even as high as a 90. But right now, I'm with you. I got him. I'm cautiously optimistic on him performing, but I got to hedge my bets a little bit, so I put him at an 84. Lefebvre, I have just a tick below yours. I got him at a 77. For much the same reason. He's a guy, again, another guy who you look at and go, well, maybe I take him as my starter and save money, blah, 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 like I've said with a couple other players. But he's never really been given the shot to be the guy. When he's had some chances, he has made some mistakes. His arm strength isn't great, so that knocks him down a little bit. But I think his running ability makes up for that. So I think, high 70s to low 80s, I think, is a good spot for him. So we're pretty much in agreement on that one, too. This is going rather smoothly.
Yes. Now, we haven't done Saskatchewan yet, right?
No, we have not. We still have Saskatchewan and BC left to go.
And BC. Okay. So we'll leave BC for last. I got Glenn as the starter. I got him at an 84. I think that's a pretty fair rating. Like Ray, if this was a couple years ago, it would have been a little bit higher, maybe an 87, maybe an 88. But, he's getting up there in age and it's a wait and see kind of thing. So an 84, I think, is a fair rating for him. And I'm going to presume that Vince Young is going to be the backup. And I got him at a 75. Yes, he might have all the skill in the world. And yes, he's performed well in the NCAA and even in the NFL for a time. But we just haven't seen him play in so long that I think 75 is maybe even a tidbit too high. But I'm going to stick with that. I got so for Saskatchewan, I got Glenn 84, Young 75.
I've got Glenn at 83. This is insane, dude. Again, a couple years ago, I'm with you. He is a high 80s guy, possibly even breaking into a 90 if all things go well. But he's a little older. That always knocks your rating down a little bit. It's the same with Ray in Toronto. The older guys get, unless they're the elite of the elite, like your Tom Brady's, your Peyton Manning's, your Drew Brees's, the age does tend to factor into their number going down a bit. So an 83, I think, is pretty good for Kevin Glenn. I got Vince Young at a 70, and a lot of that is he's that high because of the skills that he brings, but he's also that low because he has never played a down in Canadian football. And he may be the backup, but I don't know what his skills are going to translate to in this game. So I didn't want to give him too low of a ranking because I think the raw talent, the scrambling ability, the big arm, that's there. So you have to give him some credit for that. But what he can do in the Canadian game, no idea. So that's why I pegged him at a 70.
Yeah, that seems like good logic to me. Now let's move on to BC. I got Jonathan Jennings I thought he had a great year last year. Now there's still some things he has to work on, particularly the interceptions and the accuracy at times. But other than that, man, I mean, this guy has all the potential in the world to be, if not the best, one of the best in the CFL. So that's why I have him at a 92.
Oh my God, 91! This is insane.
You're one off. On
almost every starter, I think we're one or two off at most. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I got him pretty high, but as do you, for I'm assuming the same reasons that I have him. And then we got Lule as backup. And listen, he's had success in the league. I've never really been the biggest Lule fan, like not personally. Like I think he seems like a really nice guy and everything, but I just don't think he's the great player that some people thought he was. So I gave him an 82.
Holy smokes, I gave him an 82 as well. If this was 5 years ago, Travis Lule is the top-ranked player in this game. When he was MLP, yeah. Grey Cup MVP, and they won the Grey Cup, he's the top guy. But since then, he's dealt with his injuries. He has settled into that backup role. But he's also, like I said about numerous quarterbacks on this list, a guy you look at and go, oh, I could win with him as a starter. So he does a lot of things really well, but he is the backup. And Jonathan Jennings, I have as 91. And he's the guy who, if this year, right now I look at him as the potential, I think he's the front runner. And this is based on just nothing but my own beliefs. He's the front runner for MOP because I think BC is loaded with weapons. I think he's going to put up massive numbers. He's a guy that could overtake Mitchell next year if we do this again as the top guy in the league just because he adds that athletic running mix to the game that Mitchell doesn't. But you're right. The reason he's as low as he is right now is the decision-making hasn't gotten quite there. And he turns over the ball quite a bit, but he's got so much potential in this game. We saw the growth from year one to year two. It's in real football, this would be exciting to watch. In Madden football, this is the guy that I'd want as my quarterback because he'd almost be Michael Vick-like where you could run with him and no one could catch him.
Yeah, he'd be like a cheat code player, you know what I mean? Like Vick was in 2004 or whatever it was.
Bo Jackson was in Tecmo Super Bowl or Super Tecmo Bowl, whatever. I can't remember the name of that game. But yeah, he was. Yeah, do you remember playing Madden 04 and when you were playing with your friends, it was like, okay, we're going to play a game, but no one's allowed to be the Falcons.
Well, I remember playing my friend, and we would both be the Falcons.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, you just couldn't play against anyone if there was Michael Vick. Like, I mean, it was just too much. You're right. It was like Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl. And then there was Tecmo Super Bowl. I'm not sure which one he was, like, super dominant in. But yeah, it's just not fair when you're playing with those guys.
Vick, when you did the play action pass, and he did it was over. You do a play action pass, and the defense bit, he was scoring. You could be 80 yards downfield. You took off with him running, no one was catching him. It was disgusting.
Yeah,
it was fun, but it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it wasn't fun when you're playing him, but yeah, he was phenomenal, probably like one of the best players ever in Madden.
Oh, I would say hands down the best Madden player because he's the quarterback. Yeah. So he touched the ball every time. He had a cannon for an arm, and he could run faster than anyone on the field. You scored pretty much every time you had the ball when you had him.
Yeah, exactly. So
this was a blast. This was a load of fun.
Yep.
I say next time we come back and do this, let's do the running backs, brother.
All right,
in a couple weeks after that, we'll do receiver. Like, I say it's easiest to do it with the skill position guys. Like, I don't think we could do offensive linemen because I think that'd be a little too difficult. We could try, maybe pick a couple at each position. I don't know. But I'm thinking we definitely got to do running backs. I think we definitely got to do wide receivers. I think we should do, like, linebackers. I think this should be, going forward, the closer to the show until we start the regular season because this is just fun, and to have them so close, like that's – and to everyone out there, him and I did not talk about this before we did it. We just agreed on doing what players we did, and that was it. We did not sit here and say, oh, what do you have this guy at? No, this was I didn't know his numbers. He didn't know mine. So for us to be that close, I think says a lot about our knowledge of the league. Now, I'm sure there's fans of all the teams. How do you have this guy ranked so low, or why do you have this guy ranked so high? And they think we're stupid, but – I think for you and I to agree without knowing, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, if anyone out there wants to tweet us or send us a message on their player rankings, then that would be awesome too.
Oh, maybe you know what? We'll read them on the show.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, I think that'd be really fun. And I'll send out a tweet saying, you know, send us your your quarterback ratings, because that would be really fun.
It would be. We can get in. We can maybe even send some comments on ours. Like, why do you think – who do you think should be ranked higher? Who do you think should be ranked lower? Were we too generous? Were we not generous enough? All feedback is welcome, and I think it's a fun little thing that we can do, a fun little exercise that we can have here to kind of pass the rest of the off season, because there's still going to be some news, but you're going to get more episodes of this show throughout the off season now because we have this, because we'll come back just to do this as far as I'm concerned. If it's like, oh, we got nothing to do this week, well, let's do a whole episode on – let's do wide receivers and running backs in one episode. So, yeah, it's a fun little game to play, and if you want to get in on it, yeah, like Mike said, he'll throw out a tweet. You can hit us up, and we'll read some of the best ones on the show, some of the ones that disagree with us, some of the ones that agree with us, and we'll see what other people think, what their CFL video game rankings would be.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun.
It sure is. And this was fun, but that's it. We're done for the day. It's over. That's the episode for this week, folks, so remember – you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, or you can listen to it and download it over at 3downnation.com. Mike is going to send out that question, but if you have questions for us, other questions that you want us to answer, actual football-related questions, not just video game ones, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, give him your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Tacats.
And you can find me at joshsmith_82. And always hit up the 3downnation comment section, throw a question in there. Hey, that's where you can throw your Madden ratings if you want, because I think this might take up a little more than 140 characters. But however you get them to us is great. We want the feedback. We want to have a nice, fun little dialogue about this. So get us up with that. So, Mike, that was episode 69 of Podski Wee Wee. That was episode 69 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.